everyone, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated, and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. And welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. I hope that you have had an amazing week. I'm sure you've been in anticipation all week long. What is Peter going to be speaking about this week? I'm sure your week revolves around this show. Actually, it's such a good thing that you can listen whilst doing other things. You don't have to stop your life just to listen. Although sometimes, actually, with some of the topics, it is worth stopping, pausing, listening when you've got full attention, having a pen and paper there to make some notes, because some of the things that we do talk about can be quite involved and can have quite a lot of advice within them that will possibly just wash over you if you just listen to it whilst you're doing something else, while you're driving or while you're in the garden or whatever you might be doing to occupy yourself. Anyway, thank you so much for choosing to listen to us today. If you didn't choose to and you just happened to stumble across us by pressing on the schedule for UK Health Radio and this just happened to be playing at the time that you joined us, then welcome anyway. And I hope you choose to continue listening to us. This show is the Diabetes Show. We talk about things that are helpful to people with diabetes. Usually that is something that is specific to the condition. And of course, there are different types of diabetes. So sometimes it is specific to type 1, sometimes to type 2, and sometimes it's relevant to general well-being with either type. Today's topic actually is going to be something which is relevant to anyone. You don't actually have to have diabetes in order for this show to be relevant to you. And its relevance also crosses over the different decades. So you can get this condition at pretty much at any age, although it does tend to be more common in people over 50. The condition I'm referring to is actually being... Oh, I shouldn't say celebrated, not celebrated. It has been raised awareness of this month because this month, September, is Walk Together for Bowel Cancer 2020. And that is the topic we're going to be talking about today, bowel cancer. Okay. The reason that I'm doing it is because it is such a big killer. It is something which can be sorted out if it's dealt with early. And like most conditions, you know, the earlier you get it, the better. And if you can prevent it, then even better. And there are tests that can be done which can actually prevent it. And you'll hear a bit more about that later on. We've got a very special guest on the show. We've had him on before. I think last time he was on, he was talking about the Big Tick Project because he has actually suffered from Lyme's disease himself. And you can go back and find that show in one of the past shows that we have done here, if you go back into the back catalogue of my shows. The way to do that, easiest way, is go to www.bit.ly/diabetesradio. And if you keep scrolling down, it gives you 6 shows at a time, you keep scrolling down, eventually you'll come to the one which has that topic. And the person that we interviewed then and the person we are interviewing today is none other than Matt Dawson. Matt Dawson, for many of you, will be a sort of a household name. He is famous over here in the UK because he was an England rugby player for about 77 matches, I think he played. He played 9 of them as captain, and he was in the 2003 World Cup winning team as well. Some of you may know him from being one of the captains also on the Question of Sport BBC TV program, which is it's a little bit of a hot topic at the moment, or maybe something we won't talk to him about, I think. Those of you that have seen over the news recently will be aware of the situation there. But anyway, Matt is a great guy. He really puts himself out there to try and help people with conditions that he's particularly touched by in his life. Not that he's actually had this condition, but he has had family members that have. So, you know, as I say, in the past, he's talked about Lyme's disease and ticks. This time he's talking about bowel cancer. And bowel cancer is actually the fourth most common cancer here in the UK, and it is the second biggest cancer killer. So it's a pretty significant one, and particularly when, if you catch it early, then you have a good 90% chance of surviving the next 5 years. If you don't catch it early, if you catch it late, then you've got a 10% chance of surviving. So it really, really, really makes sense to get diagnosed early, to know what the symptoms are, and to therefore get dealt with. And the problem is that people get a bit embarrassed because, you know, you think, well, it's in my bottom and I don't want to get anyone looking at my bottom, a doctor looking at my bottom. And you think of all the things that might have to go, well, hey, it can't be that bad compared to the devastation of your life and your family's life if you develop symptoms and it gets worse. And in fact, actually, you know, forget about your bottom even. You don't even have to go and show your bottom at first. All you have to do is take a test by sending them a bit of poo. Anyway, I'm doing all Matt's work for him. He'll be talking about this a little bit later on. Let's leave it to him. But suffice to say that actually some of the symptoms are a little bit like uncontrolled diabetes. So I would urge you to listen up, just in case you are in a position where you're thinking, oh, it's just my diabetes, when in actual fact it could be something else. Okie dokes, let's get on with giving you some of the news on diabetes for this past week. And I am looking at the website of diabetes.co.uk, my usual source of amazing news articles. I'm really grateful to them for putting that out there in the public domain for us to have a look at. They do all the collating of all the different news topics relating to diabetes. And you may well want to go to their website, diabetes.co.uk, and have a look at what they come up with each week. And certainly any of the topics that I briefly mention on here that whet your appetite, then go there to that website and have a look at them in more detail. Because I don't just spout off what they've written. I share a little bit about what they've said to whet your appetite, as I say, so you can go and look at any particular one that is of interest to you. So let us start out with the first one, and that is that consuming large amounts of white rice can increase the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Apparently, there's been a study, more than 1.3 million people involved in it, across 21 countries, and it's taken nearly 10 years to complete. Apparently, the risk of type 2 diabetes differed from country to country. And the research team said, for example, that despite eating more rice, those in Singapore, there didn't seem to be a substantial increase. But South Asian countries particularly seem to be more prevalent. Now, I'm not sure whether it is that the people in South Asia are more at risk when they eat white rice or whether it's the quantity, because looking at the study, they found that people in South Asia on average ate 630 grams of white rice a day, whereas the average for the whole study was 128 grams a day. So obviously they're eating a lot more. The researchers also discovered that when people were eating a lot of white rice, they actually seemed to decrease the amount of wheat, fibre, red meat and dairy products. So it was just, you know, a really high carbohydrate loaded diet, which obviously isn't good for someone if they are likely to develop diabetes. The next article is about more evidence proving that losing weight reduces type 2 diabetes risk. This has been done by Novo Nordisk, who of course are probably, I think they're the main producers of insulin for type 1. Well, insulin generally, actually, because some people with type 2, of course, do end up on insulin as well. Study's been carried out by them, which has shown that just losing 13% of a person's body weight can cut the risk of type 2 diabetes diagnosis by 42%, as well as it can help prevent or slow down the development of hip and knee arthritis, and also high cholesterol by one-fifth. So certainly, as I think we all know, keeping our weight down, making sure it's a healthy weight, that our BMI is good, is actually worthwhile in many areas of our life. It helps us with many, many different things, and particularly, I should say, at the moment, with obesity being such a big factor in how badly you get affected if you were to develop the COVID-19, and how easily you might even get the disease, because it does seem that people who are overweight and obese are more prone to getting it and more prone to worse conditions, worse complications with it. I must stress that's not in this particular article. That's me sharing that from previous things that we've read and heard in the news. But certainly, this article suggests, you know, the risk of diagnosis of type 2 diabetes being down by 42% when people were losing 13% of their body weight. Obviously, speak to your doctor about that. Make sure your body weight is able to cope with you losing 13%. I don't want you losing 13% if you're already underweight. That would not be good. The next one should definitely be a motivation for you to try to control your diabetes better. And it's a study which has shown, a study of 22,000 people across the UK, that diabetes and high blood pressure have been found to impair thinking patterns and memory. The brain changes could have an impact on the risk of developing dementia in later life. This team is from Oxford University, and they were using medical data and brain scan information. Their findings showed that there was a big structural changes in the grey and white brain matter among those people who had either diabetes or high blood pressure. And remember, of course, that those two conditions often go hand in hand anyway. So I don't know whether there was an even bigger cumulative effect if you had both conditions. Professor Masood Hussain, who is an expert in neurology and cognitive neuroscience at the Nuffield Department of Clinical Neurosciences at Oxford University, said, "Remarkably, the findings show that it is possible to detect the negative effect of cardiovascular risk factors, such as raised blood pressure and diabetes, on cognitive function and brain structure in otherwise healthy people. The major implication is that these risk factors don't just have an influence on what happens later in life, the risk of developing dementia, they also have an impact on the brain and current levels of cognitive function in midlife. The link between the two health conditions and the decline of the brain was more prevalent in people aged 44 and 69. Over 70s, there was less impact. But the higher the blood pressure generally, the worse the problems got. And there's a call, therefore, for GPs maybe to start testing even mild blood pressure earlier to prevent the long-term effects." The next one is quite a scary thought, really, and it's to do with antibiotics ending up in the UK's waterways, rivers, and that's partly because it goes through our bodies and through in waste, but also that they get discarded. So if you have ever discarded any of your pills, tablets into the waterways, I urge you not to do that. Don't flush things down your loo. Send them back to the pharmacy if you've got any unwanted drugs that you don't need. Pharmacy will take them off you free of charge. You don't have to pay anything. They just take them off you and get disposed of safely. They reckon that 70% of antibiotics prescribed to people end up in our waterways through flushed waste and discarded medicines. Apparently, once they hit the natural environment, they start to interact with bacteria found in the rivers. That causes the bacteria to evolve and to develop resistance. And then, of course, if those bacteria end up being a threat to a human at some point, they're already resistant to the antibiotics that you might be prescribed. So we are really creating a bit of a problem for ourselves. As usual, humans interacting with the environment in a bad way, causing problems not only for themselves but for other creatures and animals and life as we know it. So I think that's an important one that needs to be addressed and needs to be thought of, and we all need to do our part with it. Now, the next article on the face of it looks quite encouraging. It's entitled "Conversion Rates from Pre-Diabetes to Type 2 Diabetes have dropped. But I must confess that as I read through this one, I wasn't very clear with the actual terminology and the meaning behind the study. So it's a study from the University of Manchester, and hopefully somebody will clarify this for me, or maybe you can read it yourself and see what you think. It says a number of people with prediabetes who are eventually diagnosed with type 2 diabetes has dropped significantly, according to researchers. This was done between looking at diagnosis rates between 2000 and 2015, using data from over 146,000 people. They found that 1.6% of those individuals were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes after a month, followed by 4.2% after 6 months, and 20.4% converted after 4 years. So I'm thinking that they're working it out on a month-by-month basis. So if the first month there was 1.6%, then, you know, 6 months you'd expect it to be six times that, and 4 years you'd expect it to be 48 times that. Anyway, I don't want to embarrass myself too much by playing around with figures and getting it totally wrong. I've shared what the headline was, but to me, if, you know, 1.6% become diabetic, and then after 6 months it's 4.2%, and then after 4 years it's 20.4%. That's showing me that there's, you know, definitely still a gradual increase, and, you know, these are people, the same people, I assume. Anyway, I don't want to be a killjoy on a headline like that, particularly as I'm probably getting all my statistics and my maths all mixed up. But have a look at it, please, and see if you understand the conclusion that is drawn from that. The bottom line, in my view, is that for 20.4% of them to have become diabetic after 4 years, that isn't a very good statistic. That's a heck of a lot of people. And who knows how many more will go in the next 4 years after that, or the next 6 years after that, etc. How many of those people will ultimately develop type 2 diabetes is much more the focus that I think should be played on it. Maybe we'll have somebody on the show next week to explain it all, and they can shoot me down and tell me off for the way I've shared that. But anyway, hopefully it's thought-provoking. Have a look at it. See what conclusion you come to. The next couple of articles on there, I'm not going to go into great detail on. One is about France having hit a record of 10,000 new COVID-19 cases in one day. Obviously, the UK is creeping up too. And as a result, parts of the United Kingdom are under tighter restrictions due to a second wave. That is also another headline that is here on diabetes.co.uk. Because, of course, as we know, as we've said many a time, we do need to be aware, as people with diabetes, that we are more at risk of developing it and more at risk of getting complications. Now, last week I was stressing to everyone the need to get the flu jab, and I still stress that. I still think it's really important for us as people with diabetes to get that flu jab and to prevent getting a bad batch of flu. The last article we're going to look at on the diabetes.co.uk website is all about telling the difference between flu, a cold, and coronavirus. You know, we're all told that, you know, we need to self-isolate and get a test done if we develop a persistent cough, a high temperature, a loss or change of a sense of smell or taste. But, you know, we know that every year we get coughs that can be the symptom of a cold, or it can be the symptom of flu. We can get sniffles that do lead to a bit of a temperature in some cases. What exactly is the situation with regards to working out whether we think we've got flu or coronavirus or a cold? Well, a high temperature of 37.8 degrees or above occurs because the body is trying to fight off infection. Temperature rises because we're trying to fight whatever infection it might be, and it will go up, whether it be with coronavirus or whether it will be with flu or some other different infection as well. So this article on diabetes.co.uk talks about if you're getting flu, it generally you start to feel unwell pretty suddenly. It's not a long drawn out process of beginning to feel unwell. And you might get muscle aches, chills, headaches, tiredness, a sore throat, runny or stuffed nose, along with a cough. And it feels worse than a heavy cold. Whereas a cold might be a little bit slower to come on, develops gradually. You can feel a bit poorly, but usually not as bad as with flu. And a cough eventually might develop, along with some sneezing, maybe a sore throat, runny nose, etc. You might get a bit of a fever and you might get chills and muscle aches. However, the coronavirus cough comes on and you might have a coughing fit for an hour or so. And if you have three or more of these coughing fits in 24 hours, then you've got to start suspecting that actually perhaps this is coronavirus. Obviously, people who've got long-standing conditions, bad asthma, COPD, they might have it significantly worse as well. Apparently, sneezing, it's not a symptom of coronavirus, nor is a runny nose. People who feel ill with coronavirus will have at least one of the key symptoms. And the key symptoms are the high temperature, over 37.8, a new continuous cough, or a loss or change in their sense of smell or taste. Now, I've mentioned many times on here before getting hold of an infrared thermometer. They are brilliant for taking temperatures. So you can take your temperature on your forehead and check that you are the right temperature. You can use those, of course, as well. The reason I recommend getting them way before coronavirus came out is for checking temperature sensation on your feet. Checking the levels of temperature on your feet, whether or not one is hotter than the other, which can indicate infection and Charcot joints, etc. So it's not a bad idea to get hold of one of those if you can at the moment. What I would like to say, of course, is that there is always the possibility that you get more than one thing on top of each other. So you could have two different things going on at the same time. You could have a cold and then on top of that get the coronavirus. But we don't want to dwell on that too much. I think the point is that, you know, if we do feel unwell with those key symptoms, then we definitely need to make sure that we get self-isolating and that we do get tested, because obviously you want to know whether you have got it so you know whether you can get out and get on with your work again or whatever. Well, that is pretty much it from the news section today. Diabetes.co.uk is that source. If you want to go and check out all those articles, you can do. And I encourage you to look during the week to see what does come up as well. Although if you're going to listen to me here, you'll hear the headlines anyway. We're going to be going into our interview. Before that, I did ask Matt Dawson, our guest for this week, I did ask him to choose a couple of songs. And the first song that he chose was by an artist called Keen. And the song is called Bed Shaped. And he will share during the interview why he chose that song. We're going to go into that now. And then afterwards, we'll get Matt on to share a little bit about bowel cancer. In the meantime, enjoy Keen and Bed Shaped.
Your legs are stone. You're not.
Shaped by Keen, and that was chosen by our guest on the show today. You're listening to UK Health Radio and the Diabetes Show, and our guest today is very special. It is Matt Dawson. For those of you in America who don't know who Matt is, Matt won 77 caps for England, play in a rugby union, and 9 of those, I believe, were as captain. He was member of the World Cup winning team in 2003 out in Australia, which is a sweet thing to say. And he's also been 16 years a panellist on Question of Sport. I'm curious, Matt, first of all, caps. Do you get physical caps for playing, or is it just literally, it's just the term?
Do you know what, you get one for your very first cap. It's all very regal and silver thread throughout, and you get one for every World Cup playing. But you know, contrary to public opinion, I haven't got 77 caps all piled up on top of each other for every game you play. You obviously keep your shirts at the end of the game, right, which is your memento of the day, I guess.
Okay. Oh, you had all those caps. You could have made a fortune on eBay. But anyway, you chose that song. Please tell us why you chose that song.
I chose Bedshaped because when my mother phoned me to tell me she unfortunately was diagnosed with bowel cancer, it was back in the late 2000s, I was in the car listening to that song, and naturally took the call, put the song back on and started to listen to the words around it. And of course, when you hear all that adversity and that bad news, everything seems to sort of resonate with you a little bit more. But thankfully, because she was diagnosed early, actually she sort of pulled through it. My grandfather unfortunately passed away with bowel cancer. It seemed to be quite prevalent in my family, but my mum pulled through it. So it's got a sort of mixed emotions, stirs up lots of emotions within.
I'm sure it does, yes. Well, thank goodness that she was diagnosed early, and I think we're going to be talking a bit about that today. Talking of tracks, you're here today to talk about something that you're really passionate about, and I believe that the name of the awareness campaign is called Stay On Track. Can you explain to the listeners a little bit about what that aims to do? And, well, you've already explained why it means so much to you, but what it aims to do.
Yeah, well, it will make sense when I mention that it's being led by a certain Mr. Chris Akabusi, the former athletic great. So staying on track was quite a nice strap line. I'm a patron for Bowel Cancer UK, have been for many, many years. And when Bowel Cancer UK and Norgine and Chris Akabusi came together, they sort of developed this awareness campaign of really not only getting tested, but what happens when you do get tested and what the ramifications of being tested positive and negative, how taking it to the next step, going to see your GP. That whole process is pretty tough at the best of times when it comes to cancer, but particularly particularly when it's to do with your bottom. And it's a very sensitive topic to discuss. I stand that. But as we've mentioned right at the top of this chat, my mum was diagnosed early, did something about it early. The rest of our family and friends are very grateful that she did, because she got through it. And a high percentage of cases are dealt with positively when those tests are caught early. So the Stay on Track campaign is that triumvirate of specialisms in Norgine, who are a pharmaceutical firm, Bowel Cancer UK, who are the leading cancer charity in the UK, and Chris Akabusi, who unfortunately was diagnosed, had a cancer scare a few years ago, and realised that if he had not reacted, it's his friends saying, go on, go and get a test, know the signs and symptoms, understand it. And he did that. All of a sudden, he had a little bit of blood in his poo, took the test, then went to get a colonoscopy. It was dealt with super, super quickly, had a procedure, was clear. Now, you know, if he hadn't taken that test, if he hadn't listened to his friends, then who knows, you know, what sort of conversations we would be having about Chris Akabusi. So it's an amazing story, very inspirational. And if I can help with the Stay on Track campaign, then absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So prevention, obviously, with any disease is really, really, really important. And next to that is this early diagnosis. And I mean, Chris is one. I was reading that he had things called polyps that they found within his bowel, which is sort of like pre-cancerous. So it was really good that they could catch it really early on. And that's, I believe, you've had tests done as well because of the familial tendency.
Some would maybe think that I was, when I got into my 40s and I started having tests, that I was a little bit young. But, you know, the statistics say that, you know, ordinarily, if you're, I think Scotland's 50, hopefully people are going to nod at me and agree.
That's right.
Yeah, they're nodding at me, agree. The age range is 50. Elsewhere in the UK, it's 60. But it doesn't mean that there's a cutoff at 50. You know, it's that there are, unfortunately, plenty of cases of colon cancer, bowel cancer in younger ages than 50. So when that opportunity comes to take a test, or, you know, knowing the symptoms, you get those symptoms. You get, you know, if you do spot a little bit of blood when you go to the loo, if you are feeling really, really tight in your stomach and lump, you can feel that lump, particularly in the stomach. If you're tired, very, very fatigued, if there's a change in bowel movements in any way, then go and get a test. Doesn't matter how old you are, go and get a test, because as you've said, as I know, the earlier that you spot those symptoms, the earlier, like Chris, you get there, you spot the symptoms. If the specialist sees that there are first signs of polyps, etc., they can deal with it there and then. They can catch it, it's gone, and there's a high, high success rate in the procedures.
Yeah. I was doing some research behind this last night to prepare for today, and I think since then, I've pretty much, apart from the blood in the poo, pretty much every other symptom I've been feeling, I've been like, oh my goodness, just since actually doing it. You know, but I'm of the age group. I mean, if I was in Scotland, I'd be getting a free test through the post, because I'm 50, coming up to 53. So,
I'm going to.
I'm not suspecting anything. I think it was just totally, in my mind from last night, but I'm going to definitely.
You can be the inspiration on the back of this campaign. That the first person that I spoke to on the Wednesday morning was influenced and inspired to go and get a test.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to go and get a test, and I encourage listeners to, particularly from what the research I was doing last night, reading, just re-emphasizing what you've just said. If you're diagnosed at stage one, you have a 90% survival chance in 5 years' time. Whereas if it's at stage four, you've got a 10% chance.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who hears those those statistics are going to be wide-eyed and a bit, you know, wow, that, you know, the statistics, the data backs it up. There are just a couple of things that people, and particularly men, are just a little bit fearful of because of the area that they're talking about. But listen, I mean, someone was talking about this last night. It's your digestive system. Treat it like your gut rather than your bum.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, have that mentality of dealing with it. Get tested. I mean, unfortunately, you know, that's I'm sure you've seen the stats yourself there, Peter. Even when people are getting tested, it might come back positive, and yet they're not going back to further up because they're slightly worried about, well, does that mean I have to go and have a colonoscopy this time? Well, maybe so, but, you know, use Chris as a shining example that, you know, if you get tested, if you go through that procedure, there is a 90% chance, you've got it at stage one, that it's going to go away. And, you know, the ramifications of that with yourself and your family and friends and the rest of your life is huge.
Yeah. And if you leave it, I mean, obviously, if you leave it, your survival chances aren't so good. But also, if it gets worse, you're going to end up having to bare your bottom to a lot more times and a lot worse surgery and probably investigation. So I think we should probably not scare people off anyway at this point anyway, because initially it is just taking a poo sample, isn't it? That's the test.
Absolutely right. And the test can be done in the sort of comfort of your own home. It's not like you have to go to the GP or go somewhere to have that initial test. You can do it in the comfort of your own home. So it will build the confidence. If there was any problems further to that, then yes, you would need to go to the GP. And given the scenarios that we're in at the moment with COVID, I know that for some, going out of the house, going to the GP, they're slightly concerned. There are lots of other health issues out there other than COVID. Given that hopefully we're getting back to normal, but, you know, there are opportunities to look after ourselves more and more now and less focused on COVID. It's a great opportunity to, if you are having any of those symptoms, like you mentioned there, then nip to the GP. They are ready. You know, they're used to it.
Yeah.
Don't feel embarrassed.
Yeah.
You're probably the fourth person they've seen that morning, and they've probably seen something worse than your bottom. Okay. I mean, it's so get yourself to the GP if there are any of those symptoms that I mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, don't feel embarrassed. Just feel sorry for them that you are the fourth or fifth one that day.
Exactly right, yeah.
Okay. We mentioned that the older people are at risk, but I believe that there's still quite a lot of diagnoses under 50 as well.
I think traditionally it has always been about, you know, 50 has been this this age barrier, and, you know, no one would get tested until they were 50, or the test wouldn't necessarily arrive until you were 50 or 60 50 in Scotland, 60 in the UK.
Yeah.
But you know, this campaign, the Stay on Track campaign, is for all ages, really.
Yeah.
It's a general awareness campaign. The research that was done by Norgine and Bowel Cancer UK has suggested that there are more people under the age of 50 realizing that they are having symptoms and therefore in jeopardy of having bowel cancer. So yeah, it's a general message. You are in control of your own body. If you are feeling those symptoms in your stomach, in your, you know, those bowel movements, irregular bowel movements, feeling really, really tired, lethargic, etc., then, you know, go online, have a look. Bowelcanceruk.org.uk has loads of information. If you're unsure, go and have a look at that website. Speak to your GP. You know, just tiptoe around the subject. Get a test, comfort of your own home. You can, the early part of this process is not invasive. I can guarantee it's nothing for you to worry about. that process, but you would rather know and do something about it and be able to say cure this terrible cancer, which is the second largest cancer killer that we have. And you've got a good chance of doing it if you catch it early.
That's incredible. The second largest killer, isn't it? It's amazing. It's the fourth most common cancer around as well. I was interested, for males, it's 1 in 15, which is quite interesting, being that you're a rugby player, or were a rugby player. One person out of a whole team, statistically, would have it, would get it.
Would have bowel cancer, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you put it into that perspective, then all of a sudden you realise that there is, you know, a relatively high chance it's going to be you. If you're playing in a rugby team, get yourself tested.
Yeah. My real sort of point of listening is, why wouldn't you get tested? If you've got some of those symptoms, get tested. And if you're over the age...
You should be doing this campaign for us, Peter. That's exactly what
I am doing it with you. I'm doing it with you. I'm aware of the time, and I know you've got a whole morning full of these things. And even if you haven't got one straight after this, you probably want a quick tea break. So unless there's anything else you wanted to get across, you're happy with what you've got across?
I think we're all good. I usually there's a few people around here holding up bits of paper, say this, say that, say the other. But I think from the lack of arm waving around, that actually we've probably had you've given us a fantastic slot on your show. Thank you for all the time, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about the Stay On Track campaign.
Well, thank you so much as well. If you've got a minute, if you can just quickly just introduce your second song that you chose for us, that would be absolutely awesome.
Matt Dawson here. I'd like to introduce a very special song for me, and particularly my children. It's Sunflower by Post Malone.
Brilliant. I look forward to listening to that, as will the listeners. Thank you so much for your time, Matt. Take good care. Keep safe. Keep well.
All right. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Pete. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Post Malone and Sunflowers, as chosen by our guest today here on the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio. And of course, our guest, in case you joined us during the song, was Matt Dawson, ex-Rugby England player. And for all of you over there in America, rugby is the real man's sport. So thank you, Matt, for sharing so eloquently about the dangers of bowel cancer, and your own personal family story was really powerful, and hopefully it's going to motivate some of us to really realize that bowel cancer is real, it's common, it can be devastating, and most importantly of all, if caught early, it can be dealt with. So I want to encourage you to do what I'm going to do. If you've got any symptoms whatsoever, then go and get checked out. As Matt shared, up in Scotland, age 50, down here in England and in Wales and Ireland, age 60, you get a free kit through the post every year, I believe, in order to check whether or not you are likely to have the beginnings of bowel cancer. So it's as simple as that. Get arrange for a kit to be sent to you. Well, we won't get too gross, but you scoop a bit of poo into it, send it off, and hopefully comes back with good results. If it doesn't, then they do a few other tests to get checked out. And if it's something dodgy, then at least you know about it and can deal with it. The results will come back negative for everyone. Well, we're pretty much up with time now for this week. I don't know where the weeks are flying past, but anyway, thank you once again for joining us. Please do check out the Foot Health Show and other shows on UK Health Radio. And please don't forget, come back next week, bring some friends, share it with some friends, and enjoy yourselves this coming week. That's the most important thing of all in life. Enjoy yourselves and keep safe, keep well, stay blessed. And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Olsen with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot, living the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.